You know what? So fuck off. Seriously, welcome to Fuck You Friday. This is how we're going to roll this Friday. I'm a little pissed off. I'm your host, Wynn Silberman. This is my co-host, Casey LeBlanc. And I'm really excited because we have Guy McIntyre here as our guest. And man, what a history he has. 3 Super Bowl rings, 5 Pro Bowls, 17 years in the league, perhaps. So
no, went 13.
Yeah, 13 years in the league?
Guy, he's not good with numbers.
Yeah, numbers, right.
Oh, 17. Each year you tell me it gets another year. Last year he said 13, then 1 year.
Only 13.
Okay,
only
13
playing.
Okay.
But I've been in the league doing stuff,
yeah,
you know, between
for a long time.
For a while.
Well,
yes,
you're
yes.
still in the league. You're still a member of the Niners organization in an active role. Yeah.
Right, right. Based on what I saw at lunch, you could probably still play 3 or 4 plays. I mean,
I could run out the tunnel.
Yeah, yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, done. I can't even do that. Done. I'm only 40.
Done. I don't know my bad hip. Yeah. It all depends on how I'm feeling that day. You know,
guys, it's wonderful that we're having organic conversation here. But let me just start off by saying every time that we set this podcast, because you never know who's going to turn into what episode. I believe this is our 5th episode. And looking forward to this conversation. But in that context, Case, would you just do a quick rundown of and explain to Guy what this really is about? And then we'll kick off there. And I'm excited, but this is what we have to do.
Yeah. So Guy, we came up with this concept because it was something that happened to me back in college. And it was really about Friday being the third day of the weekend and the mentality that kind of set. So we were looking at it going, how do we flip that on its head? We did it in college where it was like on Fridays, you're going to compete with the guy who's ahead of you or the guy that you don't like. Right. And really it came down to close to fist fighting that guy, right? And I really just loved that. It's like tackle whatever you have in front of you head on, right. Fight the guy that's in front of you, win and compete on Fridays. Like all of these things from a mentality standpoint, I was super excited about. So we put together this podcast to talk about elite, either athletes, former athletes, or people that have done entrepreneurial ventures, or just anybody that's done something exciting in their life, and wanted to pick their brains as far as what did they do when the lights weren't on? What were they doing to separate themselves? Because there's a lot of people with talent in this world,
right?
We can all agree on that.
True.
And so for people to maximize that talent and really do something special with it, we thought we could pick some things out from it and learn from it, and hopefully people are going to get something from it. So that's kind of the origin of where this came from. We got together and just wanted to meet people like you, talk to you as far as some of the special things you've done in your life and how you actually were able to, you know, to fulfill some of those dreams of yours.
Yeah,
I thought it was just 2 dudes that just decided to.
Okay, that's talk. Actually what it is. That's actually right, the truth right, of yeah. what it is.
Gloves are off. Gloves are off. No, it's really interesting. Look, we just had a major NFL draft, right? Last night, yeah, we all watched it. And I thought this was a great way to jump in with the first question is to talk about a little bit about your draft experience or what the hell happened. I mean, you were in Georgia, you played at Georgia, which I think they offer degrees and all that stuff there still. But you were at
Peabody
Georgia.
Peabody Award.
Yeah,
remember,
and
Peabody Award.
You blocked for Herschel Walker. I mean, there's a history already there, but maybe start a little bit about where you're from and then take us all the way to draft day to explain the dynamics of some things, including, you know, who you had as your agent, because I want to hear about that. Yeah.
Well, you know, I was just listening to the young men last night. Different ones have different stories, and one that really caught my attention was a kid that came from, like, Sierra Leone. Come on, you're Northwestern. I'm from Georgia.
The kid who came
Sierra Leone.
Yeah, I knew.
Yeah,
his
mom escaped war and everything.
Yeah,
and he had in his mind that he was going to make it to the pros. He got to Michigan. Bubba Parris would be proud of that. You know,
yeah. We'll talk about Bubba a little later too. We got some problems.
But
with Bubba.
You know, just listening to his story, and I was like, you know, it took me back to where I was. I came from Thomasville, Georgia, a little small town, southern Georgia, deep south Georgia, where the rattlesnakes and pine trees grow tall.
Devil lives down there, too,
yeah,
I hear.
Yeah. The devil came from Georgia.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, I mean, and it's football. It's Friday Night Lights type thing. You know, I was fortunate to be around some good people. I mean, William Andrews came from my hometown. Henry Childs came from my hometown. I had cousins that went, Larry Johnson, he went to Green Bay Packers. He went to Little Albany State down there. But football, you know, down south, Valdosta, all of that.
It's a thing.
It's a thing.
It's a life.
It's God, family, football.
Yeah. And not in that order sometimes.
That's a debate in and of itself.
Not on Fridays.
Right, on Fridays, true. I mean, you can steal anything on a Friday night in a small town in Georgia. because everybody's tuned into the football game. I mean, we used to get about, 7,000 people at a major game.
That's actually more than KC had ever played at San Jose State in front of. I think the fans averaged about 3,000.
You actually brought up something that's actually called playing, where you were the water boy. So, anyways, we digress.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
But even Charlie Ward, Heisman Trophy winner. I mean, I'm from a small town, and we've had about 3 Super Bowls, a Heisman Trophy. Wow. We've had about 5 or 6 pros over the years, and maybe even more than that from that small town.
That's pretty crazy.
I'm about 30 minutes from the border of Florida, deep south. But, I mean, I had that same thing. I mean, one thing I tell people, if you can go 2-a-days in South Georgia, man, you can do anything.
you step outside and you sweat.
Oh. What is it like when you're in a small town and you're the guy for a high school football team? Are you famous?
Well, yeah. Well, I wasn't the guy. I was a guy, but I came the guy as I became a junior and a senior. I was that number one guy. Everybody was kind of trying to get after. I was one of the top 11 guys in the state of Georgia when I came out. I was recruited by Michigan State, Michigan, I mean, UCLA, SC. And that's where I really wanted to go.
You wanted to go to California?
Because that's what I saw. I saw that Trojan horse, you know. I saw that Trojan horse.
I thought you saw a blonde or something. That's why I wanted to go to USC. I just wasn't good enough.
Yeah. But I remember just sitting there looking at the Trojans because they were always on television and stuff. And I wasn't really thinking about Georgia Bulldogs, even though I knew Georgia was a great football school and everything. But then when it came down to it, and I was getting recruited and stuff like that, I thought about my mom coming to see me play, and you know how was she going to get to California? I didn't know that there were ways for her
back in your day. Did they have to take horseback?
No. I don't think it was horses yet.
There were trains. You know, we're just getting to play.
Well, it's kind of interesting though. You're recruited by the top coaches in the country.
Right.
Did the Georgia coaches kind of tug at your heartstrings and use that as a ploy to get you to stay?
Well, no, they didn't really use that. I mean, I think what it was, it really was my mom not knowing that if she could come and see me play way out in California.
Sure.
I didn't really know that, you know, there was ways that they could do that.
Yeah. And especially back in those days. There were more ways than usual.
That's a great point. Okay, so you have a lot of different colleges that are after you, right?
Right.
What is recruiting like back in the day? What are some things?
It was the Wild West, right?
We're so far away from it now that it doesn't matter. You can't incriminate anybody. So there's a lot of things that go on that a lot of people don't know about.
So whatever I say can't be held against me.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
But no, I was being recruited in I'm not going to call names.
You don't have to call names, but were you offered money?
I was recruited by a certain school in Alabama.
with a coach named Bear?
No, okay.
No, yeah.
One thing I did say I wanted to meet and beat the Bear. I always said that.
Bear Bryant. That's a legendary college coach.
But a certain school, no names, right? But you can figure that out if you're a Northwestern guy, so you'll figure that
thank
out.
Thank you.
But, you know, I went on the recruiting trip. They said, okay, you come here, blah, blah. This is what you do. This is what you get when you sign this.
So it was like a nice little term sheet.
That's on the back of a napkin, right?
Yeah.
I've got recruited before.
But you're right. I'm from Georgia. Yeah. I ain't got nothing, really, you know. Real meager background.
Yeah, sure.
Family worked in the, you know, Sunnyland, the meat plant down there.
Sure.
But so I went home, and then next thing I know, one day I was sitting around the house. I got a phone call, right?
Yeah.
And they asked me, did you go take a visit to so-and-so?
Really?
And back then they were taking scholarships, plus they were finding the schools. They were taking your scholarship if you got caught.
Oh, wow.
In some kind of scandal, and they were also penalizing the school. So the person asked me, what did they offer you, right? I said, I went down there, but they didn't offer me anything.
Yeah.
Right? We're trained to say wrong number, sorry.
Right. You know, and I hung up. Right? Yeah. But, you know, the guy had came, then they came to the hometown, and he took me over to a alumni house, sure, and you know, had a little talk.
Yes.
And he took off his wallet out and took the money off the wallet off his money clip and gave it to me and said, "I just want you to trust me, right?"
Yeah. That's a nice walk of trust. Yeah.
And this was 79. Yeah. Now, I mean, you know, there was no Michael Jordans back then, right?
No.
There was only Chuck Taylors, right?
Yeah.
So, but and I looked at the money, you know, after he drove off, and it was probably about $200.
That's significant.
That's significant money,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, that's probably $3,000 or $4,000 right now.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, probably
right,
is.
Yeah, basically. And you know, I thought about it, and I said, okay. But then I got that phone call, and I'm a fast forward.
Yeah.
I'm in Green Bay.
Yeah.
I got a really good friend from Georgia. He took care. He was my buddy ever since I came to Georgia. Used to take care of my mom when they came up there and everything. He sat down there and said, "Look like you made it pretty good so far, right?" This is after I played 10 years.
Yeah, this is after you've won three Super Bowls,
Pro Bowls,
now with the Packers.
I'm with the Packers. He said, "You remember that phone call?"
Was it?
I said, "No, it was you."
Wow.
He said, "Yeah."
So it's come full circle.
But he went to all my Pro Bowls, all Super Bowls and stuff with me. We're still very close family-wise. Yeah. But he said, "You know, we were just trying to call you to find out what the other scoot offered."
You were trying to figure out what the market was.
Yeah. Well, because we had to top it.
Yeah.
But I went to Georgia.
Well, so yeah, you go to Georgia and you go as a tight end.
Tight end.
Tight end. Did you guys go for a national championship? I don't know.
Not that year, but I got switched over to defense because they used to let guys in the spring go two ways and see if they could play both defense and offense. Sure. I always wanted to be a defensive player. I almost quit football in the ninth grade when they wanted to just make me a tight end.
You know what's so fascinating? I'm sorry, just real quick. We had Bud Dupree on a few weeks back. His gripe was the exact opposite.
Yeah.
He wanted to play tight end, not play on defense. It's kind of funny.
Well, so you're really mild-mannered, right? Nice to everybody. So is there something that in your personality that flips where that defensive mentality is different? So why was it that you wanted to play defense? And what's going on in your head that – when the lights come on or when you cross that line and you start playing?
Well, that's it. My dad saw this. God bless his soul. He's not with us. He died when I was in Philly playing for the Eagles. But he saw in me when I was young. He said, "When you get mad, you're a whole different person. You're a whole different person on the field." He made that observation because he used to throw the football to me. That's why I thought, you know, that's why I could catch the football and stuff. He played football, but he wasn't that big. But he loved football. Yeah. But he taught me. He just said he made an observation. He said, when you get mad, you're a whole different person on the field. And I used to have to get myself in that state of mind because I am a nice, calm guy, pretty much. Right. You know,
how did you do it?
Just mentally. Mentally, like, I would work myself up. I would say, "I'm not going to get embarrassed today. You ain't going to embarrass me. You may get one. You may get two. You may even get three on me. But you ain't going to beat me all day." When it comes down to it, when I cross the stripes, I don't have no friends. It's game on.
And are you actually looking at the person next to in front of you, or is it just you see the whole team, the color is the opposite? Like, I'm so fascinated by the mindset of somebody who's had that much success, and to turn it from mild-mannered — I saw you at lunch, mild-mannered, everybody's cool — but what happens, like, in your mind? Take us into that mindset as to what you're looking at or feeling at the time, because it's probably the complete opposite of what you would see in a normal day.
Yeah, it's nameless faces, man.
Okay.
And like you said, when it don't matter, you're in another color jersey. I don't care if you're my teammate or whatever. We're at practice. It's on. We cross that line. Once I cross that chalk line, it's on. I don't have no friends. It's you or me. You know, I used to go against Michael Carter when I was first with the 49ers. And Bill Walsh, great coach that he was, he used to set up things. He used to stop and say, "I want to see Mike and Ty and Carter. He's way over here with the quarterbacks, and you way over here doing 101.
He would just stop the practice?
He would shout and say, "I want to see Mike and Ty and Carter go." Now,
Carter, by the way, was a hell of an. He ran a 4.5 at 300 pounds.
Dude, he was a gold
medalist and Olympic
medalist in the Olympics that year. And this was, dude, this was 10 times nasty. Michael was, and but Bill would set you on stage like that. Now you know he's yelling. Everybody's looking.
Yeah,
everybody's looking. So you either got to fight, you got to show up, you got to show up. But that was that same type of mentality I took when I was in Georgia. You know, when I get out on the field, it's on.
You know, it's interesting talking to just you mentioned Bill Walsh, and there's a couple of things that fascinating stories that you've told me before. One of which is, and this is the role of the coach and how I would think is important to providing the culture of winning. Mm-hmm. But talk to me about, for example, one time he would have you guys, and maybe this was yearly, you have to remind me, but catfishing and all that. Talk to me about that, because it's interesting. Tell me about the story, then I'll tell you where I'm going. But,
right. Well, Coach Walsh, I mean, you know, he was so ahead of his time. I mean, a lot of things you see that the NFL is doing now, he thought about the whole person. This is the emotional intelligence now that everybody's big on. He was there then. You know, he would say, you know, everybody's the same, but you don't treat everybody the same. Treat everybody the same, but you have to learn how to talk to different people different ways. Different people respond and are motivated in different ways. You can confront some people on the field, but you can't confront everybody on the field. There's certain ways you can do things. He would blame the coaches if a player messed up.
Wow.
He wouldn't get on the player. He would blame the coach.
Wow.
And say, "What are you teaching him over there, Bob? You know,
yeah.
He's not going to be able to make it like that." But
yeah.
But because he knew that you were going to defend your coach, because that's the person that you spend time with. That whole emotional intelligence, that whole trying to understand the person. He spent time trying to understand each individual player on his team and how to get them to play at their peak.
So why would he break a very competitive camp that we'd want and have you guys go friggin' fishing and stock a pond with catfish? Why did he do that?
Because he knew that you needed a break. He knew that it was intense. He knew that the game itself is an intense game. And he knew that the human nature, you give a guy a fish sandwich, you know, just go in a hardworking guy and buy him lunch. He appreciates that. You take a whole day and y'all go fishing, and it's still a competition though. It's still a competition, but you give him. But it's just that he cares about me.
It's interesting.
And most coaches, we can't miss this day. We can't miss this time. We got to keep grinding. We got to keep grinding.
As a CEO, I mean, don't you, in a way, tailor your coaching in a way? Because you are a coach as a CEO. Do you not kind of employ the same tactics in a way as Walsh would, as understanding that person is unique in personality and a true leader is it important that a true leader recognize that there's certain traits that you need to kind of build or push? Or how does that work for you in business?
Well, it's true. And you also have to read the temperature of the room, right? It's to your point of, like, if you're pushing and pushing, you just keep pushing, you're going to push them off the cliff.
Right.
You have to understand different people respond to different things, so you not just one size fits all. You have to know your people and understand your people and look at it from their perspective a lot of times. So leadership, whether it's in coaching or in business, they have so many crossovers, and there's so many overlapping things that's why I'm really fascinated by the Bill Walsh stuff. So I'm curious, as you change your mentality when it gets to game day and you go onto the field, was he the same all the way throughout? Was he the same in practice as he was while he was fishing, while he is in games? Or does he do the same type of thing? Take us into the mindset of Bill Walsh.
Well, Bill Walsh, it seemed like he was always thinking. He was always trying to make that next move, trying to find out how to get that next ounce of energy out of the person. But that's all because of what he went through. Because, see, Bill Walsh had a tag on him. Paul Brown said, "I can't trust this dude with a team."
Right.
So Bill wanted to prove all of that. See, he had something.
He had a chip on his shoulder.
He had a chip on his shoulder, but he didn't let that override him to the point that he didn't think about the person. Now, there was confrontation. you got an ultra-competitive owner, Eddie DiBartolo. You got an ultra-competitive coach. They're going to go at each other. I mean, you could see it. You could see it.
Did you ever experience it? Like where they would go head-to-head in a locker room or anything?
After games, you would hear it, man. You would
really? Do you remember any like specific example?
I think we were in New Orleans and we lost to them or something. And Bill and Eddie, you could hear him. Bill, come back.
Yeah.
You know, I think Eddie wanted to talk to the team. Bill didn't want him to talk to the team.
Is it halftime?
Yeah, no, this was after the game.
After a loss.
So was Eddie on the sidelines or is he up in the
Eddie
box?
Eddie was always at the game. Okay. Always at the game.
Is he on the sidelines, actually?
Sometimes he would come as the game goes on. He was on the side. He works his way down to the field, you know. But for the most part, he's up at the top. But, yeah, I mean, they were ultra-competitive. I mean, Eddie saying, look, I'm going to give you everything to win. I'm going to do everything.
And he did. He's famous for it.
There's rules because of Eddie DiBartolo.
Right.
God, that's a hell of a quote,
The salary cap is part of because of Eddie DiBartolo. Because his thing was, look, his dad owned shopping malls. He started that shopping mall after the wars and stuff
and
like
DiBartolo's
that.
And DiBartolo still owned a lot of shopping malls.
Right. And the team was the team. He wasn't trying to make money on the team. I mean, I got business.
Yeah.
This was
his entertainment.
This is entertainment, but these are people, too.
Yeah.
And the same way Eddie, anything he would do, you know, if somebody got ill, even in his office, if he found out that somebody was hurting or something happened to him tragically, he would come to their aid. You know, the people that worked in that did our insurance, the people that took care.
A true touch of humanity. Which seems to be a common theme about winning. You take interest in the human being, and that helps.
Right.
Because if you give that human, whoever you're working with or for or however they're doing it, it provides value and a connection that makes you guys want to come together as a team and win.
Well, let me ask you a question because you have two titans that are in the same room together, right? And sometimes that can work really well and sometimes it can't. But it increases your level of expectation when two people want something so bad.
Right.
What do you think that dynamic meant to the team from a player's perspective when you see two of they're the top people, right? You got the owner and the head coach. It doesn't get any higher than that. What are the players thinking when two people are that elite at what they're doing? And what's the mindset?
And you see the friction.
Yeah, and you can see it.
But you know that both of these people would do anything for you. You know, either one of them would go to the wall for you as an individual. And what you want to do is what they're arguing about is winning a losing football game. So what that makes you do is want to go out there and win. So these two people won't have this friction because if we win, there's no friction.
That's right.
The locker room's happy.
That's right.
The friction comes when you lose.
It's the same thing in business, and right? Revenue cures a lot of things.
That's right.
Winning
it's a
cures
W.
A lot of,
right.
Winning that's, cures a lot of things,
there,
too.
There
right?
you go. Winning solves everything.
Winning, so does revenue. A lot of revenue can solve a lot of problems in business, too.
And so but it makes you want to go and work even harder because you know that both of these people will go to the wall for you, and if you are in some kind of need, whether it's personal or whatever, they're gonna come to you. If they hear about it, they're gonna come to your rescue. They're gonna see what can I help you.
So that touch of humanity is an important cog.
Same thing. Yeah. Touch of humanity every time. It works.
So there's famous stories about Eddie DiBartolo, right? And him taking, you know, families of players and people that work in the building and their families on vacations after these Super Bowls. Can you take us through? And I want to get to the Super Bowls, but I'm still fascinated by Eddie DiBartolo from an ownership perspective because they don't do that anymore.
No. Well, they outlawed it. Yeah.
That's why they don't do it anymore.
I mean, we went to Hawaii. We've gone to a lot of different places. I think the first time we won, we had a nice thing at the Palace of Fine Arts and things of that nature. And Eddie flew everybody out. He flew everybody back to Ohio one time and had a big party there. And then he took us to Hawaii. And it wasn't just the players. It was secretaries. It was the guy that cleaned up the building and stuff. Well, it was everybody. It was family.
That's awesome.
It was family. But then again, it goes back. If you look back, it goes back to his dad. His dad was the same way. In his corporation, if he found out somebody was hurting or somebody, he'd say, here.
Did Eddie and Bill, what impact and influence, whether it be the same or different, obviously empathy and some of the things you just talked about, but what impact have they had on your life?
And it's that same thing that I know that people are people. They do stuff, but they're still human beings and they still hurt. They still need to be congratulated. They still need a pat on the back. And if they need something, sometimes they need you to just come up to them and say, how you doing? You know, and say, is your family all right? What's going on? You know, if it's anything I could do, you know, just a simple thing. I graduated from Menlo College, right? And I didn't know Bill knew that I was going to school, but Bill sent me a present and stuff like that. But it was just that touch of humanity. Every year he would get the guys to go.
No, wait a second. I'm sorry. And I understand where you're going, but there's two sides of the coin with Bill. Because, okay, he congratulated you, right? But I tend to recall, for example, he was a little pissed off about your weight, for example. Is that not right? I mean, he always wanted you a little more, right? And what, I mean, I'm assuming dropping a huge 15-pound ham in your car, did you find that as a nice gesture by Coach Walsh, or did that piss you off?
No, it didn't. I found it as he wanted me, he said, look, this is what you need to do. To help us out, you need to get bigger. You need to get stronger, you know, and I'm going to give you a ham to start you off.
Did you get in the car and you're like, what the fuck is this?
Did it say from Bill or from Coach?
No, I didn't know who it was from, but it was in the car.
Okay, did you eat the ham?
Oh, yes, I ate the ham.
You better, man.
I'm black. I'm from Georgia, bro. Ham. A pig ain't did nothing to me, okay? A pig ain't did nothing. But you know, it goes back to you know, people, when I was in Georgia, and I kind of left that spot, but when I was in Georgia in Thomasville, you know, people, I remember a time when I was at a pivotal time in my career because, you know, like I said, I came from, you know, working class family, mom and dad divorced when I was young and stuff. I wasn't the best student. I wasn't the best person at the time either, and I got into different things. You know, I got into drinking. I remember one time I went to practice. We were having a spring game, you know, in a squad game, and in between there, you know, and I was probably, it may have been my sophomore, it had to be my junior year, and I went home, stopped by a buddy of mine's house. Of course, he said, hey, you want to have a drink? I said, okay, I got time. I'll take a drink, you know.
And one led to two.
Next thing I know, I thought, I'll take one, go home, sleep it off, go back to practice, you know, in a squad game. I'll be cool, you know.
I mean, you really got to be good.
This is the thing now. I wind up, time got by me.
Oh, no.
And I said, oh, I can't go home. So I had to go back to practice, right? No. I was not prepared for practice, and I almost lost my, you know, that was one of the pivotal times in my career, that the head coach, who I love now, and Coach Jim Hughes, he wanted to throw me off the team.
Wow. Because they knew?
Yeah, I was drunk, bro.
Oh, shit.
I was drunk.
Oh, shit.
Okay. I ain't gonna lie to you. Coach Bryant, James Bryant, he was the coach of the – back then, I mean, I was three steps away from segregation, you know.
Sure.
So schools had united at that time. But he was the premier African-American coach at Douglas High School, where my dad coached at, where Charlie Ward dad wow. played at and stuff, and where my mom went to school. So he knew me. Coach Hughes really didn't know my family. He knew my family. He knew my dad and stuff. And he stood up for me, and because Coach Hughes was going to throw me off the team, wow. you know. But Coach Bryant, God bless his soul, he stood up for me and said, "Give him a chance, you know. Give him another chance. Sure. Give him another chance." And that's too something that I think about. You know, giving people another chance. I mean, we all make mistakes in life. You know. we all stray off. It's easy. It's easier to stray off than it is to stay on.
Right.
And giving people chances, you know, I mean, you go back into, you know, injustices and stuff like that, you know, talk about people getting put, kids being put away for life and sure. stuff. They need another chance, man.
Yeah.
I mean, because we all make mistakes. We all make mistakes. And all we have to do is look at ourselves and be honest with us and say, I made some mistakes in my life. And if somebody didn't give me another chance or if I didn't get another chance, I wouldn't be able to be where I am now. But somebody gave me a chance. And that's something, too, I carry with me. You know, we all make mistakes, man. And
but it sounds like
acknowledging,
self-acknowledging that True. You've made a mistake True. Is actually just as critical as someone being able to give you that second chance. The first thing that has to happen, actually, if something really momentous occurs in your life and you change and you win against adversity, it's not necessarily that someone's giving you that second chance. It's that somebody is you, and you're looking at yourself in the mirror going, you know what? I fucked up. How do I change this? And right. it's at that moment that I believe that what you're saying
well,
is when
I mean,
you
get your
you
ass
grow.
Kicked off the team and you're out. And right. You yeah. know what I mean? Like you still need
that's
somebody
a moment,
to give you that chance.
And that's where you either care or you don't care.
Don't care, right.
Well,
right.
So walk us through what happened. Like how did your life change that day?
Oh, yeah.
Or did, within because, that time?
Because I looked at the game and I said, I got to respect the game. And I never got in that. Now, I'm not going to say I never drank anything sure. again, of course. But I never abused that privileges of walking out on that striped field.
And so when you did that day, was your ego outside of your body? I mean, did you think you were larger than life and you thought I could get away with anything, I could do anything? Because at that time you're probably 20 years old.
No, I was a high schooler. I was.
Oh, you're in high school.
I was
okay,
in high school.
Wow.
I was in high school, and I just did something stupid.
Okay.
But it was a habit that it wasn't something that I did on a regular basis. It was just that I thought I could get away. I thought I could do and go to sleep and then go back to practice. Not like
you were a time optimist.
Yeah, that was the first time I ever did it. The last time I ever did it.
Sure.
I never abused me playing football like that on the field. Now, I've had other problems down the line that was off the field, but I never... When it's game time, I give it game time. I set parameters around myself, and I give myself the time that I need to be able
well,
to.
Well, hold on. I think this is an interesting
because case. I don't want to disrespect the game. I don't want to disrespect the people that are out there, and I don't want to disappoint.
That's a good point. Well, I think what's interesting is that the world sees the NFL, and what they see in the NFL is what's on TV, which is the product when you're playing the game. Mm. But you bring up a good point. You had stuff off the field that's going on, right? So football's an intense game. You're studying, you're right. game planning, there's strategy involved. Everybody's coming at you. How do or did you handle stuff when you've got stuff going on off the field? How do you compartmentalize and still stay focused? And
or can you? Can you
yeah,
even
can
compartmentalize?
You? Or like, what are some of the tactics that you used?
Well, you know, it's just like everything. Sometimes we can keep that thing, you know, that water from coming ashore. But sometimes that water breaks that barrier and it overruns your everyday life. Your everyday life gets mixed up with your personal, with your business life, and that's when you have to get help. That's when you have to know that I'm drowned in here.
Mm.
You know, the water has creeped over the boundary and I need help.
So some sort of self-awareness.
Same thing, self-awareness. You have to... You know, and it's just like everything. You have to be aware of where you are, who you are, and what you're trying to do. Mm-hmm. And if you stick to that 95% of the time, you're going to be successful. But if you start letting it overcome, and you start getting down to that 75%, 60%, you're not going to be successful. You're going to be a 50-50.
Right.
You know, it might happen, it might not.
Yeah, that's
you
a good
know?
Point.
And most of the time it doesn't and you fall off, but that doesn't mean it's over. You just got to reevaluate and be willing to say, I messed up. I need help. I need support. I need whatever I need to help me to get through this. And that's self-awareness.
Sure.
You have to be self-aware. That's one of the biggest things. You have to become awoke about yourself. And who you are and what you're trying to do. And then when you're trying to do things, when somebody's trying to do something, you can always get other people to come in and help you.
Is the idea of self-awareness is interesting, especially in the NFL. People in the NFL have been told their entire lives how great they are. So self-awareness is probably more difficult in situations like that. Do you have different perspective now that you're older? And do you have anything that you would say to people that are in high school, that are elite, college?
Or the rookies coming in, like right now. Right. Like, and I know that's, I assume, one of the roles that in the Niners organization, literally today, you have so much wisdom. You've been in the league. You've experienced everything that you're talking about right now. Talk to us about that.
Well, you know, I look at the time when I first got in. I go back to my agent story.
Oh, yeah. We never got there. We gotta.
But, I managed to get through Georgia, and I managed
to. Yeah, let's talk about you getting drafted.
I got through Georgia, but I went to Georgia. I was pretty successful. Played with Herschel Walker, played with some great players, played with Norris Brown, Charles Jr. These are just some of the guys that I know, Connie Norris. Coached by the legendary Vince Dooley, God bless his soul, Wayne McDuffie, who was my offensive line coach, who passed away. He was one of those guys that, Wayne. You know, when I think about Wayne McDuffie, I remember. You know, my boys used to say, "That man looking for you." He's looking when I was in high school. He was the recruiter.
Sure.
And he came. And I went to Georgia. I signed to Georgia. But he was one of those guys. He said something to me. He said, "You know, Mac, you're gonna be out here for 30. You're gonna be out here for an hour, hour and a half, maybe 2 hours. Give it all you got." That's what I took out there every day. He left. He went to Florida State. I got another coach. And he's I didn't play but 2 years, started 2 years in Georgia. Because mm-hmm. Wayne didn't like me.
Yeah, well, that's because I don't like you
wanted,
either.
He wanted to make me a center. He yeah. wanted to make me a center. I was a tight end, you sure. know, trapped in a center's body. And then I got hurt, and I all those things that happened. I got hurt after my rookie year. I had the red shirt. I started back on the scout team.
Sometimes you can get buried, right? Because there's politics that go on. There's new recruits. There's donors that have an influence. How do you, because you redshirt, you get hurt.
Well, one of your favorite lines, are you hurt, are you injured, right? Yeah, I mean, right. That's a classic line.
It's a classic line from The Program, which is a great football movie, right? He gets up and he goes, "Are you hurt, are you injured?" And he's like, "What the hell's the difference?"
What's the difference?
The difference,
if you hurt, everybody gets hurt.
Get your ass up.
Everybody get hurt. You just suck it up.
Yeah.
Now, if injury, playing is not going to get you any better.
Yeah.
You know, you have to make that distinction between am I hurt or am I injured?
Because everybody thinks they're injured.
Right, right.
I'm injured.
If just hurt, tape it up, shoot it, whatever, and go play.
That's right.
If you're injured, it's not going to do you any good to go out there and play.
And by the way, the same thing, again, there's so many things and overlaps in sports to business. And I love to make these connections is if you're hurt, I got the sniffles.
Right.
Get your ass up and get to work. Right. Yeah. Like on Friday. Oh, well, I could cut out at 12, and if I just tell them I'm working from home, right? Who are you cheating, right? You're not injured. It's a mentality, and that's why we keep talking, kind of circling back to this idea of what are you doing when people aren't paying attention, because the discipline that it takes to actually go through an entire work week and get yourself to 5 or 6 o'clock propels you into this level of Monday being more productive.
Well, it's winning. And something we talked about at lunch, and it was kind of interesting. We were like, well, when were you on a bad team? And you said, I've never been on a bad team.
Unbelievable.
And so, which is unbelievable. And at the same time, we looked at each other. Well, okay. Well, one of the things we'd love to talk about on the show is winning culture, whether it's business, because there are parallels. Are there common traits? I mean, you've literally, obviously I know your role in the Niners and through high school and through college, but was there something that was anchored, that was a common theme throughout your entire history as a athlete, as a football player, for culture?
Now, as I look at it, and I'm trying to go from high school and even going back to why football.
Yeah.
you know, Ira Flowers was he was a leader in Thomasville, Georgia. He he used to get kids to play on the special team. If he would give them hot dogs, so everybody so, wanted to be on the
so
team.
So he was one of the first coaches to create the bribe.
What's well, the sticker, the
but,
carrot?
But, you're appealing to human nature. Sure. Everybody want to eat.
Okay.
A hot dog kid.
Well, especially a kid. Right.
Well, that's something actually that you've really brought up through Walsh, and it might be the common theme you're talking about, is recognizing human nature. And if you can bottle that up as a coach or understand that that's part of the culture that needs to happen – maybe that's part of the formula that we're searching for on all these podcasts. It's like, look, that's a big thing.
That's a great point.
We all what? Human.
Yeah.
Yep.
We all got to eat. We all want to be patted on the back.
Yeah.
You know, that's it. I mean, those basic needs, we want to be appreciated. We want to be said, you know, we want to be, you know, if we're hurting, we want you to take the time to be consoled and take concern for us and not just, you know, flip it. Hey, but how you doing? How's your family?
And mean it.
You know, don't say, is there anything I can do for you? And then I call you. And, I can't do nothing for you.
Now, is there a point at which you become too soft, though? Is there an edge? Or is that the art of winning? Is that how you?
I think. If you look at loyalty, how do you build loyalty? How do you build loyalty? You take care of people that take care of you. You know, I mean, you go back to the mob. What they do? How's your family?
Yeah. How you doing?
How you doing?
You good?
You need a turkey.
Yeah.
What?
In your case, a ham.
For you. Yeah.
You know,
it's interesting, though.
We're human, man. We just need somebody to want to care for us and just be interested in us, pat us on the back. And that does wonders. You know, that does wonders for a soul, man. Just to hear that, hey, you're doing a good job. Here you go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting.
You know, and you build loyalty, man, because they know this dude didn't have to do that.
Yeah.
Because so-and-so they never did that, you know, and – now I'm giving everything I got. I'm not trying to skip out on Sunday, on half a day on Friday,
because
I know he gonna come in and say, "Get out of here. Mm-hmm. You need to go. You need to go go be with your family."
Yeah,
you know, and not worry about she got. I'm paying her $35 an hour, and she got to stay here 6 hours every day. You know. No, she's got kids. She would love to have that time with that kid, maybe to take them to the park and see something different that they never seen, because she only gets off at 5 o'clock. Yeah. And by the time she does that, she's got to cook dinner and it's day and put you to bed. But she gets out at 12. She can take you to the park.
That's right. Read the room.
Have some awareness.
Right. As you get older, you know, you look back and I go, well, man, when I was 20 and now being 40, my whole perception of the world has changed. Yeah. And a lot of it has to do with awareness and empathy for people and so forth. And I think you continue to multiply that, and there's some compounding interest that comes with it as you get older. So your perspective changes.
But you do it not because you want something back, but you do it because I just want to do it.
Well, it deepens your relationship with people, too.
It deepens your relationship. And that's what you're trying to build.
And if you build a lot of really deep relationships, my life gets better. That's right.
You enrich your life.
You enrich both people's
lives. You enrich yourself.
That's exactly right.
By enriching others, you enrich yourself.
That's right.
That's it. That's the return. That's the return, you know.
So we're really going to transition here, because I'll be remiss if I don't get an opportunity to talk to you about the person I think who's as close to, I don't know what your religious beliefs are, but he's as close to Jesus as there's ever walked the face of the earth, and that's Joe Montana. Okay, so I've been Joe Montana for my Halloween. Well, I'm 41 years old now, so for 40 years, I've been Joe Montana.
He's got 16 right here. It's really weird.
You know, so Joe, cool. So walk us through your relationship with him, walk us through playing with him, and just give us let's start at the top, and let's just dive into what it's like to play for the greatest football player of all time. Maybe the greatest human. I don't know.
Yeah. You know, Joe is so it's so crazy. I was a Cowboy fan.
Oh my God!
We're gonna edit that out.
Yeah. I was
there's no
49ers. Apparently Charles Haley is now too. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, because I grew up as a tight end, Billy Joe Dupree, '89. You know, I'm a Cowboy fan, and I'm sitting up here one Sunday. I came home from college. You know, playoffs on, and I'm like, what the 49ers that just beat the Cowboys and knocked them out of going to the Super Bowl? Yeah. I'm like, who's Joe Montana? A couple of years later, I'm sitting there in the locker room. I'm drafted by the San Francisco 49ers. And I'm at a rookie camp. You know, we're 3-day camp after the draft. Who walks in? Joe Montana and Dwight Clark.
Yeah. Did he walk in or did he levitate?
Well, they kind of just floated in. It just kind of materialized
Was there smoke coming off of him when he walks in?
But was there a different – let's just go into a game and a play. Let's be in a huddle. Was there a different – what was different about him? Was it right from the get-go at the huddle? Did he keep things loose? Was there something that was different or was it –
Joe just liked playing. Hmm. He just it didn't come hard to him. I mean, it may have been hard, but it didn't. He went with it. You know, he loved life. Loved, you know, him and DC inseparable at the time. You know, and he was just
Dwight Clark.
Yeah. Just like a kid. You know, just having fun, man, and. You know, he wasn't all stressed about it.
Does the team take on his personality, Bill Walsh's personality, Eddie's?
Yeah, how does that work?
How does that dynamic work?
I think our team took on Joe's personality because, you know, like you said, when Joe was in the huddle, man, he wasn't frantic. You didn't hear that nervousness in his voice, you know.
Because players can tell.
They can
weed them out
they
real
can tell
quick.
You if, you, if exactly you're struggling right. trying to get the play out and stuff yeah. like that.
You can
that.
See it in their eyes.
Do a couple of these.
Yeah. But Joe was just Joe, you know. He'd just go out there and do it. And the same thing. Joe threw a bad pass. He said, no, dude, that was my fault. That was on me.
Take responsibility.
But he takes it off of you.
Yeah.
Now, you probably should have caught that pass.
Sure.
But he don't want coach to yell at you or look at you. He say, I did it. That was my bad ball, man. I got to throw better.
And he's setting the precedent for the entire team.
Entire team.
Yep. That's incredible because we're talking about culture. We're talking about right. team. Well, we're talking about leadership.
And let me bottle that up. I think everything that we've talked about, there's one element that we haven't addressed, and I think it's really important. It's have fun.
Yeah.
Fun is important. Having fun, enjoying yourself. So everything that you've talked about in terms of culture, in terms of caring for people, but working really hard because of loyalty, all these things have this interplay. And at the very end, don't forget to have fun.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
I think that's critical.
You got to enjoy life. I mean, God wants us to enjoy this life. He gave us this life to enjoy. Now, there are pitfalls. There are things. But, you know, once again, they're going to happen to all of us. We're going to all run through struggles. I think adversity is something that everybody, like what Mike Tyson said, is all good until you get punched in the mouth.
Yeah, everybody has a plan. Everybody has a plan until
you get punched in the mouth.
That's such a good line.
And that's just life. Life is going to punch you sometime. You're going to get some punches.
Well, and as an athlete, agility, and whether it's on the field or in business, is what you're talking about. Because like you said, everybody has a great plan in business. You think it's linear. Hey, we're going to do this. Here's the execution of the plan. And then life happens, and you're like, do you freeze?
No, it's true. All right, so we're talking about fun here, right? A 13-year NFL career, we've talked about the difference between your era and then today's era, right? So in today's era, there's not something that goes on that nobody knows about.
Right.
But in your era, I mean, there's a lot of things that were probably really fun that we don't know about. So I mean, I understand there's probably maybe some people that
Kim, don't worry. This is just back in the day. This is before you and Guy got married and everything. So I'm just going to set that out there. But, yeah.
I want a fun story. And I want you to go as deep as you possibly can. And we'll edit this out.
Well, how about on the plane? Like, if you guys won and you had a cross-country flight back, Are you guys drinking soda water and sitting upright and really congratulating each other for the win?
Look, I came in. They were smoking cool cigarettes in the back. Okay,
that's right.
And giving out, and you got a bag of beer. And if you didn't want your beer, you gave it to the guy that you knew to drink beer.
Wow! And this is after the game.
It's after the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, Green Bay, they give you a little side.
Well, it's interesting though, right? It's not a party. It's not as fun, and they didn't win as
well.
Much
no, back. No, they gave you a sack of Percocet.
Oh, but it was a different type of fun pack.
But you're hurt. Hurt, man. Yeah, you played a game.
You're not injured. You're hurt.
You're hurt. You know
they didn't give you both.
By the way,
that cocktail might be helpful,
as implicitly as Niner fans, I wanted to state for the record that the Green Bay Packers provided certain party packs, whereas the Niners always just gave beer.
Well, that's what I was saying. The combination of both would have been really powerful.
Yeah, yeah.
No, you can't combine. That's it.
Oh yeah.
One or the other.
I'm sure Wynn could tell you some stories where he's combined a couple of things. That would be his fun story.
Oh, cool.
It's just so crazy.
There must have been parties or
it was a bachelor party that I went to. There was a guy there called Superman.
I
ain't gonna tell you why they call it Superman.
What are we supposed to guess?
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of your teammates.
He was pretty super.
What was it?
There you go. We'll leave it at that.
I think we can all imagine. What happens after a game back in those days?
Well, back then, man, we didn't gather.
Y'all didn't hang out together?
No, we kind of – everybody was wanting to be a long ranger or no more than two, three, uh-huh. too
what
many.
What was it when two guys are at the club and the third guy walks in, somebody's got to go?
Was that a rule in general?
Yeah, no cameras, no videotapes, no nothing, man. We were the generation of, dude, don't do it. Don't say
see
it.
Say no evil.
Don't tape it. Yeah. Don't shoot it. Don't.
Yeah.
Now, but even if you don't post it, somebody else going to post it.
And everybody's got a phone. Everybody's got a camera.
You beat them to the post,
Guess. This dovetails into something I think is just as entertaining. I just want to talk a little bit about ritual. Right. And in the context of I feel like every player has this sense that they have to do something in order to get ready for the game. Is there a couple stories that maybe that you have where whether it's a walk into dinner or a team meal before the game? Was there any sort of weird off cuff stuff that someone would do? I heard when we were at lunch, you were talking about someone wearing a robe or something, his uniform.
Hacksaw. God bless his. Hacksaw, I think he lives in the Bahamas on a deserted island or something.
It's a good spot.
Yeah.
Spot for him.
But he played at the Rams. That's probably where it all happened.
Yeah, L.A. L.A. kind of gets
weird
you
out, man.
Yeah.
But when he came to the 49ers, you come down to get taped to eat dinner, to eat pregame. Hacksaw's already in his full-blown uniform.
So you're eating in your normal clothes. Everybody's in their normal clothes, and then this guy rolls in, and he's full pads and ready to go.
Full pads, everything.
That's got to be a little weird.
I kind of like it.
Of course you do.
I'd be eating with my helmet on.
This is like 3-4 hours before the game. He's already in his uniform.
Yeah, no.
I really
yeah,
like that's, it. That's eye black on. I like the whole thing. I'm enjoying that.
Well, at this point, if you want, we're going to go to dinner after this guy, and what I'd like you to do, if you want to put some now, black eye on and the whole deal.
I'll put my Joe Montana uniform on. Will you block for me? We'll put this on social media.
Dude, I don't block for nobody anymore.
Okay, yeah.
Don't worry, I can't barely walk, so we're good. I'm not going anywhere.
Oh, my God.
But no, Hacksaw, he would have the full. And then Larry Roberts, God bless his soul, he would throw up before every game.
Oh, like Steaming Willie Beeman
he would throw up and then everybody would just start cheering. Are we ready now?
That would be the thing.
That was the cry.
Was it on the sideline or was it in the locker room?
It was in the locker room.
That's pretty funny.
We called him Juicy. Once Juicy threw up, we were all ready.
It's like Major League when they bring the chicken in for good luck.
Yeah. Well, listen, Guy, first of all, thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate you taking the time and sharing a lot of things and a lot lot of wisdom about winning and culture and everything that we've talked about today. Yeah. I think we're going to wrap up today, and it's a wonderful Fuck You Friday podcast. Everyone, thank you for joining. I just want everybody to remember to please tune in, follow us. We're on Spotify. We're on every possible platform out there. Like us. Do whatever you need to do to help us win, too. Whatever it is, Fuck You Friday. Here we go. Thank you very much.
Right. Cheers. Thanks, guy.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Hey, God love you all. Y'all take care and love on somebody out there.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
All right. Thank you. Cheers.